man, so it's, you know, usually here in the Pacific Northwest, plant sex season happens fairly, you sort of ease into it because, I don't know, the plants just sort of do that sort of thing, but not this year. I went from nothing to having to fill every facial orifice with various balms and liquids in order to be able to just stand here or sit here in front of this microphone to speak with you. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. Joining me for the first time, actually both of you joining me for the first time in a while, but welcome back, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
Are you here to teach high schoolers now?
I am definitely not here to teach high schoolers.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, are you putting me on my own FCC challenge with this opening?
A little bit. Me too, to be honest with you. And Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yes.
I actually may be here a little bit to teach high schoolers.
Quite possibly, yeah. So with you two here, I mean, there's an obvious... How are the Sounders going to do? How are they doing?
Oh, we don't want to talk about that too much.
Which Sounders are those?
Yeah, this is the only thing that you guys talk to me about outside of the show. Those Sounders?
Yeah, it's not going so well so far this season.
They're gearing up for another championship season.
That's right. You know, start it slow, come out strong. It's kind of like in racing. Here, I'll switch sports for you, make you feel better. You know, as you're coming in a turn, the fastest way to do is go in the turn slow, come out fast. So you do the turning part earlier in the curve rather than later, so you're straight.
They're breaking into the turn.
Yeah, they're breaking into the turn so that they can come out of the summer transfer window.
You guys are making me proud. you sound like Cubs fans. You're making me proud. Speaking of things that will never succeed in a million years, B-movie director, restaurateur, and social media provocateur Uwe Boll has challenged conspiracy theorist Alex Jones to a physical fight. Boll, who is permanently 12 years old, tweeted real Alex Jones that he would fight the InfoWars host, calling him a chicken, a coward, and several vulgar slurs. He encouraged all followers to retweet his boxing Uwe Boll challenge until Jones accepts. All right, so there are bad movies. There are unfun bad movies that are just a pain to watch.
Right.
I'm trying to think of a for instance, but the problem with them is once you've seen them, you will literally consume any household cleaners in order to purge the thought from your mind. The RoboCop reboot, maybe. That was pretty... Well, no, that was too middle of the road. It was just bad.
Yeah, that one was just uninteresting. It wasn't...
Yeah.
It had some interesting elements. I mean, it was very mediocre.
Yeah.
But there was... And the definition of mediocre is that there's some good and some bad about it.
Well, mediocre and truly bad kind of meet in the middle. They're just movies that they leave your memory, either because nothing happened to them, or you forcefully try to eject them out of your memory.
I think my most recent example of something so bad I just want to forget it exists is the Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Don't say that around Gillis.
Oh, man, that movie was terrible.
He won't stop talking about it. He loves that movie.
Oh, it was so bad.
And then there's truly good movies, bad movies, like the works of Ed Wood, Birdemic. I don't even know if I include The Room in that category. I think what I like about The Room is the social phenomenon and just how much of a train wreck.
That's kind of how I'm falling right into this bad but good categories, things like the Bruce Campbell movies like Bubba Hotep.
Oh, yeah.
Which I find, like, when I watched that movie, I didn't like it at all. I find it much more entertaining to talk about that movie than actually watch that movie.
I wouldn't call that a bad movie or a good bad movie.
Camp movie.
It's a camp movie. Camp movies are another category.
Kind of an intentionally bad, tongue-in-cheek sort of method of filmmaking.
And then there's Uwe Boll movies.
The man who set video game films back 20 years.
Yeah.
As in... before video games existed.
Right, yeah. He set video games back 20 years, and this is after Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
And Street Fighter. Don't forget Street Fighter.
And Street Fighter. Well, I can't forget Street Fighter. I had to do it for a panel on Radio versus the Martians. Literally, so as far as I understand, they get some sort of tax break in his native land of Pluto, and as a result, he makes just these exorable tax write-off movies.
Right.
Until they change the laws, and that can't happen. And then Uwe Boll tried to do a crowdfunded movie, and that didn't work, and he just sort of took his rage out on the internet.
And started challenging everyone to fights, which apparently is something he does.
This is something he's been doing far longer than just...
Oh, does he have a history of doing...
He fought the guy from Something Awful. He fought... Like, he constantly challenges...
Harry Knowles?
No. I would pay to see that. Oh, okay. No, the other one. Okay.
Did he challenge Matthew Lillard to a fight?
I think he challenged Matthew. This is what he does. He's a film bro.
Yeah.
And that's, well, I guess you could say it's film, but I don't think he's ever shot on film. this is all he does, and I feel a little bit dirty for having brought this up, but it is Alex Jones. It's everybody's favorite fake drug seller.
Well, and that leads to my main question in this whole story is, does anybody lose in a fight between Uwe Boll and Alex Jones?
Hopefully both of them.
Two men enter. We win. Our dignity loses. Because, yeah, everybody's talking. All my friends, because they know it, are like, hey, what, did you know that this is happening? Because this is two things that you like, bad films and Alex Jones. I don't like Alex Jones. I don't even like him ironically. He's an execrable human being. Man.
Is it really beneath our dignity to imagine a celebrity reality TV show boxing match between two people we dislike? That seems pretty run of the mill these days.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that happen that I feel would harm my dignity if I participated in them. Yeah, it's not claymation, you know. At least if we're done in claymation, at least it might be funny. Where this is just going to be kind of sad.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's going to be rotted hot dogs slapping together inside of the squared circle. I'm not really.
Wasn't there an actual reality show with celebrities boxing or fighting each other?
Yeah, there
at some
was.
Point? Like, I remember, wasn't Tonya Harding on that? At
yeah,
some point?
And William the Refrigerator Perry. That's the only reason I know. It's because
right.
It's the 86 Bears.
Not so. Those two against each other specifically, I hope. But
I'd put money on Harding. Yeah, so. I don't know. Yeah, this is no more of this. Uwe Boll just needs. We need to give him like a romper room that has no exits, and he can just sit there. And there's a camera, and he can use like clay models and a ball pit to make his future Resident. No, he doesn't do the Resident Evil movies.
No.
But it would make more sense if he did. yeah, I don't know.
I'm split because like. My own moral standard says that violence really never solves problems, that violence is very rarely the answer and only in the most extreme cases. And this is certainly not an extreme case, but there is a part of me that just really wants to see Alex Jones punched, and I'm not willing to do it myself. And it harms me not at all to see Uwe Boll lose any dignity because he never had any to begin with.
Right.
So it seems like a zero sum win-win.
Perfect match. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, Uwe Boll is just looking, I think he's just looking for relevancy. So that was part of the reason I'm hesitant to give this the attention I'm giving it now. Where Alex Jones, this is sort of an attack on his masculinity, and he places great store by his masculinity.
Indeed, he does.
He's full of hot blood. He's an American. He's going to chew people or something like that with his meat products. read the Der Spiegel article for more information on that one.
His whole shtick is that he's mad and he's angry and he's just about ready to fight.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to see somebody kind of call him out on that.
Yeah.
Put your money where your mouth is sort of thing.
I don't know that I've ever said this on the air, but I actually have boxed in my past. I'm not a particularly good fighter by any means. I can't now because one good solid sock to the jaw and I'm out about 12 large. But I would never enter the ring with somebody I'm truly angry with.
Mm-hmm.
That's just unprofessional.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's the point. The point of boxing is you should be able to walk away from that ring, giving the other guy a hug, saying good fight. And,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, you got to psych yourself out because you're going to enter a ring and punch a guy. And that's something I found very difficult. My defense was always good. My offense always sucked.
Mm.
And But I just I'm not that angry at most people, especially not the kind of people who box. You know,
it's like, yeah.
I just no, I don't like this. and but everybody, hey, did you find out that yes, I heard. Thank you. Yeah. I'll watch it.
Irrelevant is arguing with obnoxious and
yeah,
like, nobody wins.
It won't get the legs it needs to embarrass Alex Jones for not taking him up on the offer. That would be the one place where it could work.
Mm-hmm.
Is if everybody was like, yes, do this thing, and then Alex had to come up with some sort of, you know, dragon lord from Beta Reticuli have infested Hillary Clinton's house and are trying to make Uwe Boll do this, therefore I will not give in to the takers and their boxing matches or something. You know, they'd like, if they won't be anything fun,
well,
like
Boll
that.
Boll is not really relevant to the current, you know, conversation.
No, he's not.
He's not a prominent famous figure at this point. It's perfectly easy for Jones to just ignore that he even ever tweeted anything.
But now I'm picturing David Icke as Alex Jones' corner man.
I was about to say, given my description, it put me in the mind of David Icke, and I'm like, but if Boll went against David Icke, David Icke might do it, because David Icke appears to be, I mean, he trades, he peddles in crap that hurts people, et cetera, et cetera. But he also seems to be literally up for anything.
This is true.
He does seem like a nice guy. He seems like a nice, crazy, scary person with pretty terrible ideas, but he'd probably do it. And you know what? I'd be more comfortable with that.
That one?
I don't know why. This is an exploration into, I guess, my values. But, yeah, I'd rather see Uwe Boll fight David Icke than Alex Jones. I'd rather just Alex Jones evaporate.
I feel like David Icke has more to gain through that sort of fight. Jones is at the peak of his publicity right now.
I think he's just on the other side of his peak. I think he's
already peaked.
Yeah.
But he's, the fact that we're talking about him at all is the reason this conversation is relevant, is because of Jones's current popularity, not because of Uwe Boll's.
Right. I agree. Absolutely.
And so I don't think that Jones has anything to gain from a fight, either a public Twitter war between him and Boll, or an actual, you know, staged match or street brawl or whatever you might call it.
Right.
But David Icke, I don't think, is anywhere near the level of public consciousness right now.
No.
And there might actually be, just as a thought experiment, there might actually be something to gain for both parties by staging some sort of absurd event.
Yeah, probably. A Phoenix teenager was rudely awoken on Easter Sunday when his mother allegedly tased him in an attempt to rouse him for church services. The 16-year-old phoned police to report his mother, Sharon Dobbins, who reportedly told the dispatcher that she needed to be with Jesus. She also claimed that she merely activated the taser to make noise, but did not hurt her son. Police found two marks on the teen's leg, and Dobbins was subsequently arrested and charged with child abuse. Ms. Dobbins missed services, instead spending 12 hours in jail. Hello, son. I'm in jail.
I'm always interested when somebody thinks that they can compel someone by force to be pious. And I can't see how that has any good effects for either party.
I don't know that she was compelling. I mean, her claim is that she needed to be with Jesus, and that this person going with her son, was apparently a requirement for her being with Jesus.
No,
I don't think she was requiring piety of the son. I think she was just requiring bodies and seats.
I think she was saying that he needed to get his butt to church on Easter for his own salvation.
Well,
not for hers, but for his.
Right.
She apparently said the same thing of the 911 dispatcher, that she also needed
the 911 dispatcher needed Jesus.
Well, at that point, it's just
how dare you work the phones on Easter? You should be in church.
Yeah. Well, that also is probably some sort of defense. Lady, you're tasing people. I need to send the police. You should all be in church and not arresting me. I think is how that's going to go.
See, I feel it's interesting the way you bring up, Mike, that you can't see how using force to push someone into piety would work, when I feel like actually there's a long history in our world of that's how religion spreads, usually by the sword first. That, you know, when one empire conquers another, they impart their religion, and then that sticks even when the original conquering empire recedes.
Yeah,
it leaves that religion there. That's actually seems to work. And I'm kind of with you, I don't know why, I can't see how
that's a good point. That's a good point. I guess what I'm drawing on is my own kind of personal experience of being dragged to church as a teenager. And I will say right up front that my mom never tased me or even threatened to.
Yeah.
But I did get into figurative knockdown, drag out arguments.
I was never dragged to church, but I was dragged to fix a boiler with my dad on a Sunday. Because you get a call, I need help, you're coming with me. Grab all the tools. That's the closest I had.
Like, hell, you're gonna help me with yard work for the entire Saturday afternoon. And
yeah. I don't know. There's also sort of the meta-narrative of the fact that this was a taser and the psychological concepts that tasers bring along where, oh, it's a non-lethal weapon. Therefore, I can use it when somebody doesn't get me a Coke out of the fridge.
Right.
It's like suddenly, now that she owns a taser, which is a company also based in Arizona, that now it's no longer just a defensive thing. I can use it to compel somebody to go to church or get the newspaper off the lawn or throw out the old milk from the fridge. It's the weird psychology that comes from something that is, quote, a non-lethal weapon, unquote.
Right.
That I find, I actually find really, really kind of, the thing weird, like a thing my dad told me, is that these in science fiction stories, if you ever had those weapons that would just make people pass out with no other side effects, that would be the end of human civilization, because everybody would be passed out all the time. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Go to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Baptists and Camp Quest Northwest.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an Ngadwe Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. In the break, we were talking about my bottomless ability to talk about David Icke, maybe that might be for another day. A Baptist group promoting religious liberty criticized a Baptist preacher for claiming that school shootings can be blamed on the separation of church and state. The Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty wrote a scathing response to statements made by preacher Robert Jeffress, calling his remarks cynical and truly disgusting. Jeffress was on a Fox and Friends panel when he attributed the rise of school shootings to kids not learning the Ten Commandments in school. The Baptist countered, The Baptist group countered Jeffers' claims, saying that church-state separation has been an important in minimizing civil strife by reducing the social conflict that inevitably emerges from religious favoritism.
I find this group fascinating. This is a Baptist group that very much aligns with the group. What's the group? The Foundation for the Separation of Church and State.
Oh, Citizens United for the Separation of Church and State.
Yeah.
Which is an unfortunate name in right. the light of Citizens United, but it's what they call themselves.
Or Americans for the Separation of Church and State is the other one.
Right.
And Americans for Separation of Church and State is a multi-religious group. Like, it's not an atheist group. It's right. a secular group in the traditional sense of the word. And I think they're headed by a Baptist preacher. Like,
right.
And this is a group, it's specifically a Baptist group that believes very strongly in separation of church and state. And it's like, how many times have we made the argument about, like, you know, you have to understand that these laws aren't just for protecting
the non-religious,
but it protects the religious as well. Because if we start allowing religious people to make laws based on their religion, well, then you're going to get sectarian differences and everything. And suddenly whoever comes out on top, like, there's probably more Catholics than anything else in the United States. Suddenly we're going to be following Catholic law and you get left in the dust too.
Right.
And this is a group that has, I don't know if they heard us say it or if they came to that conclusion themselves, but they've taken that argument to heart that it is for their own protection and everyone else's protection that we absolutely stand by this separation.
Well, once upon a time in America, this understanding that the First Amendment and the you know, the creed clauses were for religious people and not specifically for a religious people,
right,
was clearly understood by everyone.
Yeah.
That really only changed in the 20th century with the rise of basically religion as a tool of statecraft
in the moral majority,
yeah, the theocrats, all that stuff,
right? Well, it goes all the way back to the Mayflower and the pilgrims, like, specifically coming to America to escape religious persecution,
right,
re-escaping of the state religion.
Yeah.
And so the even though they themselves were very religious, it was they set up a society where they could practice their own religion without the government's interference,
right? Because the problem is that once you start having a government involved in religious matters, religious favoritism, by definition, has to occur.
Right.
Because if the government is going to have an opinion on religion, it's going to make a decision, and that's going to give favoritism to some branch of religion and not to others. Like, when people talk about, you know, like here in Pierce County, when we did the In God We Trust fight,
right,
which we half won. I don't really consider it a victory, but a lot of people do. You know, they said, well, no, God could be God for everybody. It could be any God. It could be this God. It could be that God. So every time we tried to change it to make it clearer that it was some other God, or that it was a more general concept, it stopped being a God for everybody and became a God for Christians.
Right.
And that's precisely the kind of favoritism that we would see. And additionally to that, if you have a government that has a dog in the, or a horse in the race or whatever, they're going to have to start making specific, you know, eventually somebody's going to want them to have opinions on transubstantiation, on the Nicene Creed, and suddenly you've got a state religion.
Right.
And the freedom that, you know, that this country was founded upon was that, not that people aren't religious, is that, this is not the government's job.
Right. And when you look at baptism, and this is a joke Becky particularly liked, but baptism is a big, big tent religion.
yes, it is.
It's very diverse. There's a lot of different, like, in this very story, you have a Baptist preacher who's saying one thing, and you have this Baptist group saying, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, quite strenuously.
It's got a decentralized authority kind of structure.
Right. The Baptist religion in particular has a very important role in our understanding of the separation church of state, which is the very term separation of church and, or wall of separation of church and state, comes from a letter to the Danbury Baptists by Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
He was writing to a church to explain to him why this law was for their benefit.
Right.
And I always love the argument. It's like, well, you know, it doesn't say separation of church and state anywhere in the Constitution. It's like, well, yeah, you're right. It was just written down by the guy who wrote the Constitution to explain what he was thinking.
Yeah. While describing what the First Amendment did, he used the phrase separation of church and state.
He was like, oh, here's what I meant by that.
Yeah. And given the kind of guy he was, I wish I included it in the First Amendment. Anyway, so we're also here, sort of shifting gears here. Mike, you are not only an occasional host on Ask an Atheist, you're also something Camp Quest Northwest. I don't remember what you're...
I've worn many hats, and I continue to wear many hats at Camp Quest Northwest. Right now, primarily, I'm the vice president of the board and camp director for our June camp session.
Okay, so you're the camp director for... So you're the guy who makes the June session happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not to take all the credit, but
well,
to take my share.
Yeah. I mean, blame. You know, some credit follows the blame.
Well, sure.
I should. No, there's a bunch of people involved, and I, from firsthand experience, I can say, it's a lot of work putting on Camp Quest
Northwest.
It is
a lot of work. Yeah, we've been hard at work for
a lot of people involved.
We've been hard at work at this camp since the last camp session ended.
Yeah. So you got a theme that so camps in the Camp Quest sort of. Body of camps. There must be a gaggle, murder. I don't know what the word is.
What's the theme for a group?
Yeah, what's the theme this year?
The theme this year is the Flying Spaghetti Western.
Flying Spaghetti Western.
Yes.
And I think I know what that is, but can you lay it down for me?
So what we're doing is we're taking some of the Flying Spaghetti Monster imagery, and we're using that kind of sprinkled throughout the camp session a little bit. And we're also making it kind of a Western-themed camp.
Okay.
So, specifically drawing on, like, Western movie tropes.
Yeah.
And, like, spaghetti Western music and Bonanza theme song for a potential game show that we're going to host. and just kind of everybody's going to be wearing cowboy hats and pasting on fake mustaches. And walking around in their dusters, and it should be a really good time.
Dang, I even have a duster. So how'd you decide on this one?
It's not really a funny story, but I was taking pictures at a camp session in 2016, and I happened to catch a photo of a group of counselors in silhouette against the sunset.
Oh,
and everybody in the picture was wearing hats. A couple of people were wearing cowboy hats and a couple of other different style ball caps and stuff. And it looked like a Western. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to do a spaghetti Western theme? Because I'm a huge fan of spaghetti Western movies. And
I had no idea.
And so I thought, oh, how could we make a spaghetti Western theme? And I immediately thought Flying Spaghetti Monster and combining the two. So the theme has been in development in my head since the 2016 camp session. So it's by the time camp happens, it's going to be 2 years in the making.
Right.
I'm really excited about it.
So usually on Ask an Atheist, we're saying, hey, you should get involved with camp and do things with camp and camp this and all that. A little bit of a different focus this year, I believe.
Yeah. Usually we're having a drive to, get more counselors involved, get more adult volunteers involved. And because we have such a high demand, of so many campers who want to come to the camp session, they want to make sure we can staff those camp sessions. This year, for whatever reason, the tables have turned, and we're with the reverse.
Okay.
So we have a lot of returning volunteers this year, and our June camp session, we don't have as many campers as we would typically hope for.
Right.
So right now, what we're really looking for is to drive camper enrollment in our June camp session.
So when is the June camp?
So the June camp session is June 17th through the 23rd.
Okay.
So that's a Sunday afternoon through Saturday morning.
Right. Do you think the so it sounds like you're having some issues like getting people into the June session. Do you think that might be have something to do with the proximity of the end of the school year?
Yeah, that's the number one thing that we've heard from people, that it's either overlaps with the end of the school year or it's too close to the end of the school year and they want
right.
a little bit of downtime before they go off and do something else.
Okay.
And last year we ran into a similar problem where people who had originally the school year was planned to get out before our June camp session last year. And then snow days would push the school year back a few days, mm-hmm. and it ended up overlapping for them. So we had some people withdraw at the last minute and some people who skipped the last two, a couple days of school in order to attend the camp session.
Is that the preference where, let's say camp gets out June 8th or June 19th for them that year? Could they arrive late, or would it be, better to maybe just cut out that last day? Or,
well, let me tell you what I'm coming from the camp perspective, so I feel like the day at camp is important.
Right.
When you arrive at camp, that first kind of 24 hours, that first evening ends up being, it sets the tone for the rest of the week in a lot of ways. So that first meeting kind of, that first night is a sort of bonding event for a lot of the campers.
It is.
So when you come in after that initial bonding period has happened, it's not impossible, but it's harder to become a part of that group. There's sort of already a group structure in place that you're putting yourself into. So when we have counselors who apply and they say they can't join us until midweek, we generally will say no, sorry.
Right.
Just for the camp cohesiveness. From a camper's perspective, though, we have had campers who have arrived late. And the fact of the matter is that if you arrive a day late, then you're still going to be able to participate in, 5 days worth of activities instead of six. You're still going to get a whole lot out of camp.
Sure.
You're still going to get to go kayaking and rock climbing and sit, sing songs around the campfire. So I wouldn't want to deprive a camper of that week at camp if they're not able to just attend the first day because of another commitment.
Okay.
So we wouldn't turn someone away for that.
All right. That's cool.
But we would encourage you, depending on what that last day of school entails.
Right. That's the thing is I was talking about this with Becky, who is an educator. It's like, I wouldn't just go from my experience because the hell do I know? I'm a high school dropout. I'm the last guy you should be taking that advice from. But Becky was like, if I were faced with this, the last day of school, sometimes it's socially important, but usually it's just kind of a...
We've heard from people where their last week of school is that's their final exams.
That's a different thing.
I wouldn't encourage somebody to skip their final exams in order to attend camp. But it's often the day after the final exams where it's just a kind of a pep rally. It's an assembly. And there's not a whole lot of teaching that happens that day.
Well, I would assume final exams would be more counselor age than camper age at that point, wouldn't it?
Sometimes, but I've heard that from.
Do they do final exams for sixth graders now? Is this the world we now live in?
That's
okay.
Well, our campers
I'm so far away from any of that to be able to answer questions.
We take campers all the way up to age 17, so we do have high schoolers.
Oh, okay. All right, never mind then. Yeah, that okay. Sorry, I was under the impression that they went into the sort of the counselor program at that point. But I'm not an expert. What do I know? So if they want more information about Camp Quest Northwest, where would I send them, and what would you like to tell people?
The easiest place to go to get more information is go to campquestnorthwest.org. That's okay. Camp Quest Northwest, all one word, .org.
Okay.
And from there, you can find the link to camper registration. You can find the link to the financial aid application.
Yeah.
You can find linked more information about camp, the sorts of activities that we have planned. We've put some of the information out there about the activities that we're going to have that are aligned with the theme. So there's lots of interesting stuff to check out if you go to campquestnorthwest.org.
So campquestnorthwest.org, full disclosure, this is also full disclosure and possibly an enticement, is that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey and Camp Quest Northwest, that's a Venn diagram with a fair overlap. There's a lot of people who've been involved with both. I would have been involved this year. I actually really love the theme, and I'm trying to give some input on it when I can, but I've got this whole community radio thing going on as well. And, I'm going to be erecting, I'm actually going to be on a tower when that's going on. Yeah.
You always give that excuse, I swear.
I do, yeah. It's the 1920s. I sit on the top of a tower.
I'm going to be on a tower somewhere. I can't make it.
Yeah, I swallow goldfish. It's weird. There's a lot of cool people. A lot of people you've heard on this show are going to be at Camp Quest Northwest. And, they're very careful about vetting their staff. And I can speak to that specifically. And Yeah, so definitely, if you've been looking for an opportunity to send your kid to Camp Quest Northwest, but you've heard that it's always jam-packed, now's the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now is definitely the time. So we have an email. This is Darren from the UK who writes, "Is it possible that cows are solipsists?" Mike?
Yes. Yes, it is possible.
Yes, it is possible.
So to get into that a little bit more, first you have to define what a solipsist is.
Okay.
Or what solipsism is. And the solipsism is pretty straightforward. It's basically the philosophical proposition that you cannot know that any other minds exist, or that anything exists outside of your mind.
Okay.
So it's a statement about what you can know.
Mm-hmm.
It's often taken to be a statement about what you believe.
Right.
So a solipsist is often accused of believing that no other minds exist. But that's not what it is.
I think it can be used that way.
Sure.
It might be an abuse of the concept of solipsism, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean you can't abuse it. I mean,
right.
Any tool can be used incorrectly.
You might consider that to be a literal solipsist. There might be a different word for that.
Yeah.
But
the word I would use is jackass. But.
There's all sorts of words.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's a statement about what's knowable. And so the basis of solipsism is, I think, therefore I am. That's sort of the entry point. So for a cow to be a solipsist, a cow would have to have that thought that of him or herself as a being, as a person, an awareness of their own mind.
Right.
So I don't know that we know that cows have that awareness. I'm sure I could do some research and find that out. But first,
the terms you're looking for are sapience and sentience.
Yeah.
Do cows have either of those?
Sure.
Without those, they can't be solipsists because they can't have the mind to know that there might not be a mind, anything but their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Would they be easier to eat or harder to eat if they were solipsists?
And they might just be evolved exactly to the point where they have an awareness of their own mind and none others. So they may, in fact, be solipsists.
Well, I guess it's time for a break. Or is it in your mind? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the break. We can come back. Might do some emails, might do some exorcism. We'll see.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
I could say welcome back, but it might be just you. I don't know. Is there really a show going on? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'm one of those people who doesn't really give the concept of solipsism a lot of thought, but apparently a lot of other people do. And by a lot of other people, I mean everybody else in this room. Because yeah.
The fact that you're even considering that there are other people in the room establishes your point of view on solipsism.
I think you know where I sit on this one.
Well, and the thought I had, because, you know, the most famous sort of pop culture reference to the concept of solipsism is The Matrix. You know, the idea of the world doesn't actually exist. You're just a being plugged in the Matrix.
I think it's old enough to be a classic film now.
It is. That hurts.
Yeah.
How about this one? There are kids graduating high school who weren't alive when that movie came out. But as it relates to cows, now I'm just imagining, okay, let's say the Matrix is reality, and so someone took a cow and put it in a tiny cage so they could use it for energy, you know, use it as resource, and then it gets plugged into the Matrix so it can experience freedom, but then in the Matrix, humans took this cow and put it in a tiny cage so we can use it as a resource.
Yeah.
It's just, even...
It's cows all the way down!
even a solipsist cow is still kind of messed, or stuck in a cage, can't do anything with himself.
Yeah.
Well, I think that ultimately, when it comes down to it, solipsism is bullcrap.
Hey!
Oh! Ow! Ow!
Ow! Is this existential pain you're feeling?
Yeah. There's a pain in my mind. A Vietnamese pop star has been arrested in Hanoi after killing his paramour in a drug-fueled botched exorcism that left his victim with 33 garlic cloves lodged in her windpipe. Wen Chau Viet Quang allegedly hallucinated ghosts after taking meth, ran screaming from his apartment, stole garlic from a street vendor, returned to his victim, and stuffed her mouth full of garlic in order to ward off the spirits. A friend's attempts to intervene were foiled due to the friend being incapacitated by the same drug. The singer was charged with manslaughter.
Holy 33?
I shouldn't laugh about this.
I know.
And it's towards the end of the show. We're in dead baby territory, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna end the show on a high note.
Yeah. What is it with garlic and this stuff? I don't know.
Like, garlic's great.
Yeah.
Like, I love garlic. I don't see how it ever got turned into this, like, anti-spiritual fight off vampires and demons thing.
Are you not thinking about
it? I don't know. Have you eaten garlic and, like, and observed the reaction of other people to your presence?
Yeah. Well, I've never seen any demonic anything while on garlic.
I think that...
Although there's never been a point where I'm not consuming garlic, so maybe if... Maybe things would make more sense if I just stopped eating it. What is it? Did the garlic cloves represent pustules on the back of the devil? And then adventurers had to go recover these by hitting the back of the devil with sticks to recover these cloves of these cloves, and they would be called clunters or something like that?
And then they'd have like a big pasta dinner in celebration?
Yeah. What is going on with garlic?
I don't know. All I know is that when I eat too much garlic, I don't even want to be around myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it lingers with me for like days.
Oh,
I've
heard about that.
Maybe that doesn't happen to everybody, but if I have if I have even a few garlic fries at a ball game or something, bring it back to sports. I'll taste it on the next morning, and I can't stand it.
Oh yeah, I love. I can't imagine many meals I make that don't have at least a hint of garlic in it.
Also, could we just mention that meth is the only drug that comes with its own anti-drug ad?
It's kind of built in.
Yeah, jeez.
since we are making light of this tragedy, I will continue to do that. One of the more shocking things of the story is that it was a Vietnamese pop star, not Florida man. Like, this sounds this sounds like a story that would just fit with beginning with Florida man, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, it's a story that that can't happen here. That's the nice thing about it, is it's a story that this is the only thing I think that it just happens in Vietnam and strange places. You never hear about it. A Puyallup, Washington man has been charged with first degree murder after shooting his cousin in an alleged drug-induced fantasy where he believed the devil was possessing his victim's body. Robert Reynolds had smoked an oil-infused joint with his cousin Samuel Boren and a third friend when Reynolds insisted that Boren was trying to hurt them. Reynolds shot Boren 11 times, and Boren died on the scene before paramedics arrived several hours later when Reynolds finally called his father and authorities. There is a host of Bill Hicks material specifically about this subject that I cannot touch because we're on the air. Just assume I reference it here. I'm the wrong guy to talk about this because
I feel like... If we actually want to delve down into like what's really wrong, it's people doing drugs and then harming other people is kind of, you know, that happens. Like,
that's right. That's unfortunately,
it's an unfortunate side effect of the fact that drugs exist and people use them. But it is,
well, people do harm to others without the involvement of drugs too.
This is true.
And is there a positive correlation between the amount of drugs being done and the amount of people being harmed? do drugs have a net negative effect on people?
I don't.
That is it. Well, that's an entirely...
That's a whole field of study.
That's a whole field of study.
Right. my point is we're extrapolating all drugs are bad from one or two instances where drugs have been involved in an incident that's what turned out bad.
See, and I wouldn't say that all drugs are bad. I wouldn't say most drugs are bad. In fact, I wouldn't even say meth is necessarily bad. I'm just saying that there is a side effect that sometimes comes with use of something like meth where... one person will harm another person, if not themselves or something
right.
else. But what I'm looking at here is what ties these two stories is the way that drugs sort of increased the superstition level to the point where a superstitious belief was more important to the person than the actual life of the person they were with. Does that make sense?
I think it could be said more generally that intoxicants can strip away the more reasonable part of your brain, leaving you more susceptible to just the garbage that your brain generates that is put into your head by early canalization. Where if you were raised to believe in God and Jesus and the devil and spirits and demons and demon possession and stuff like that, that stuff would come out when the more reasonable forebrainy bits of your consciousness are suppressed.
Right.
And that might explain why okay. Like I said, can't get into that, but,
well, what strikes me about this story is that these are two different, they're both murderers in these cases, but they're both claiming to operate on a spiritual authority. And what strikes me is that that's the same level of spiritual authority that the writers of the Bible claim to have. And you say that, okay, maybe they were influenced by drugs, but maybe the writers of the Bible were influenced by drugs. We don't know whether or not they were or what makes the writers of the Bible more of a reliable source
actually,
of God's word
believe
than
it
these
or,
two.
Believe it or not, the writers of the Bible were on drugs is one of those, it's those phrases that if it enters into a conversation, I now know this is a conversation I need not pay any attention to because it's now gone into a direction. I do not care about this anymore. It's like, but here it's actually...
Oops.
No. This is the one time where that's not true because, well, one, because we're on my show. But two, you talk about weird things that happen in the Bible and all these miraculous events and stuff like that. And now the only time you seem to hear about it is when people, is in the evil drug stories section of your local newspaper. And... while correlation doesn't equal causation, sometimes the hint of the two should merits further investigation before, obviously before making a claim, but it does merit some investigation.
Well, and it's often not necessarily even drugs, but it's people who have a mental illness who claim to have some contact with spiritual or who are hearing voices.
Right.
So it's interesting to me where we draw the line between what's a reliable source and what's not.
Yeah.
When they make that sort of claim.
Right.
Yeah. That leads that's directly actually one of what I think one of the more interesting unanswerable questions, which is how much of our history is driven by undiagnosed schizophrenics? How much is that the sort of basis for some of the things that we now see as taken as biblical truth,
yeah,
per se? Like,
we haven't talked about that much. Now, I'm bringing all this up because I'm not saying don't talk about it. I'm bringing this up as points of conversation. Is the reason I haven't talked about it very much on the show is because it is out of my respect for the field and the fact that I'm not an expert and can't say. But that has always been a question in the back of my mind, is how much of this, how much is the Book of Revelations a collection of observations made by people who weren't in their right state of mind? Or
right. And what does a schizophrenic look like to a pre-medical, society, a society that doesn't understand basic science, society, particularly when you look back to, 2,500 years ago in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
What does a schizophrenic look like to them?
Right. And it does seem eschatology is the clearinghouse for this sort of stuff, because any, you know, any religions have taken the time to study, be it the, you know, traditional Western European polytheisms or Islam or Hinduism or Christianity. You know, a lot of the stories make a certain kind of sense. I could see them being authored by people who are trying to tell a moralistic story. And then you get to the end of the world and it's crazy time. And so every time somebody goes mentally off the rails, it seems like somebody goes, oh, they're just talking about the end of the world. We'll put him at the end of the book.
I do remember reading an article that pointed out that Revelation says Satan is a seven-headed dragon, and their response was, talk about burying the lead. Come on, man. Yeah.
Why is Satan possessing people when he can just show up as a seven-headed dragon? Come on. It's like, that wasn't... That'd be really easy to detect Satan. Was Satan there?
I don't know. That one.
You put that on the cover. Yeah.
There was Bob, Mike, seven Becky.
Seven-headed dragon.
The seven-headed dragon. George W. Bush. Well, we haven't really touched the most important part of this story. Puyallup. I think we need to do our listeners a solid and say it's pronounced Puyallup.
Puyallup.
Yeah. That's how it's pronounced. When my brother came into town, like 5 years ago, we were going to Puyallup to a tap room there. And I go, okay, I'm tired of this conversation. I don't want to have this conversation with anybody in the Pacific Northwest while you were in town. These are how these towns are pronounced.
He's just all right. the cheat sheet.
Yeah. We're driving to Station Ubrew, and I go, all right, repeat after me. Puyallup. Okay. Squim.
Hoquiam.
Yeah. He's like, what the heck's going on there? And I'm like, dude, Algonquin? And we pronounce it Armitage? Come on. It's not like we don't get weird pronunciations.
Oh, yeah. I think when you grow up in an area, you hear those before you see them written.
Yeah.
They're just part of your consciousness before you see them written. So you read them without the bias of what the letters are on the page.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay, we're making light of both of these stories. We've got two people dead because of demonic possession. You know, if you listen to this show, and if you are a human being who cares about other human beings, you know the moral of this story. You know what's going on. You don't need me to tell you it. I just don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to say that two people are dead. It's stupid. They're dead for stupid reasons. They shouldn't be dead. Don't do religion. Nathan from the part of the internet that is in Canada writes, I just wanted to reassure Sam that the new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on Netflix are worthy successors to the original series. I've watched them and I like them and the new cast quite a lot. Although there will always be my favorite episodes from the Joel and Mike days that can't be surpassed, the new episodes are very funny and carry the same spirit of the original shows. Sam can feel safe in adding them to his MST3K ration schedule and be reassured that they'll hold up compared to the old ones. Thank you. I just wanted to share that because people note my Mystery Science Theater weirdness. I think this is news that probably everybody but me knows, but I just thought I should share it. From Nathan from the part of the internet that is in Canada, the same part that Ask an Atheist now comes from for reasons. Do that.
Living in the future is weird.
Yeah.
Have you been reluctant to watch the new MST3K?
I have. Just because I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. And I'm a wimp, but also because I ration it now, because, like, you know, until season 11, that was all the Mystery Science Theater that was ever going to be made. Mm-hmm. And if I watch it all, then I've watched it all and I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be very careful to ration the episodes. And now they're making new ones. One, I'm just going to come out and say it. Like, if I were to celebrity cast Mystery Science, a reboot of Mystery Science Theater 3000, mm-hmm. I probably would have picked these people because they're real. I think they're very funny and I think they're great, but mm-hmm. It also has and I'll just go with a Mystery Science Theater joke. It also has a circus of the internet stars feel to it, which makes mm-hmm. me a little uncomfortable. I guess I'm just gonna have to amplify on what I feel. But then the other side of it is they're making new episodes. I'm gonna watch them very slowly.
Gotcha.
I have watched about half of the new ones, and without spoiling or anything like that, I will say, like, the interstitials and the production values all feels very Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Well, it's Joel Hodgson. I would be disappointed if he didn't do the thing that he's really, that he's been excellent at his whole life.
Right.
I mean, his stand-up routine was I mean...
A whole bunch of props that he kind of...
Yeah, he's the only prop comic worth watching.
Gallagher... No, just I can't even finish that sentence.
I've never kicked anybody out of the show midstream before, my friend.
But Gallagher is where I draw the line.
But having watched the episodes, I find myself having trouble getting through them, and I don't know if it's the episodes themselves or if it's just me, because I find myself in even older episodes, like, I don't have the patience to sit through.
It's not for everybody. And when I tried to show you a few of my favorite episodes, you would nod off.
I get zone out, and it's what I do now. And so I used to be able to sit through these like crazy. It used to be one of my favorite shows. I think it's more me that's changed than the show. And so, yeah, I am still working my way through, you know, when I got quiet a couple moments and everything, and I'll watch in a half hour of an episode or something.
Yeah. I will say my, I forgot to do something. I was supposed to play some music for you. Oh. It'll have to be next time.
Okay.
One of my favorite modern Mystery Science Theater moments was playing Season 10's Hamlet.
Aha.
For you and Carol.
Hamlet in a German bunker.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. It's a German production of Hamlet dubbed back into English by people who are only vaguely familiar with English. And I showed it to Carol, who I don't know if it's come up on Hands Free Football, is an enormous, like, she loves all of Shakespeare, but specifically Hamlet.
Yeah, we have a poster of the entire play of Hamlet on our wall.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Dave.
Been a pleasure.
You can go to our website at atheist.radio. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions@atheist.radio. Ask an Atheist WA is our Twitter. I think that's all of social media. Who's on Facebook anywhere? Anyway, thank you, guys.
What's your Snapchat?
Oh, what's Snap?
Visit us at campquestnorthwest.org to register for camp.
There's that. See you guys next week.